We continue. Almarine Radio. And I'm privileged to be joined by Lieutenant Colonel Austin Rollins. Austin, first of all, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I am well. I'm well. Thanks, Mac, for having me.
All right. Well, no, it's a pleasure to have you on. I saw a website in the news, and I clicked on it, and how would I describe it? I would say it was female Marines saying that this can't go on in our Marine Corps anymore, and we need the help of everybody to make this stop. And so I kind of rooted around, and I sent some emails, and I got an email back from Austin, and so here we sit today. But before we talk about the issue, we have to talk about you, so we can decide if we should trust you or not. So, born and raised where?
Born and raised in Gainesville, Florida.
Okay. And how big of a family? Tell me about that.
So I'm born to Austin and Jeanette Brown. I'm one of four daughters, no boys. Lived at home until I was 19, and then I jumped ship and joined the Marine Corps. I like to tell people that boot camp was an improvement from living with my folks. That's how strict they were.
Wow. So how does the Marine Corps actually get on your radar? You're growing up in Florida, a lot of Marines in Florida. Your dad a Marine, your uncle a Marine, anybody?
No. And I'm sure that I knew some Marines at the time. I just didn't know that I knew them. So I was getting ready to be a junior in college. And like I said, still living at home, probably about 19 at the time, and had been working at a little small bookstore and going to school. I walk in one day and a friend of mine says, "Hey, I joined the Navy." And I looked at her and I said, what's that Navy thing all about? And she told me a little what she knew. She just signed up that day. And I'll tell you, the very next day, I went down to the recruiter's office and I walked into the first door that I could see. And before that time, I will tell you, I'd never seen a Marine in uniform. I had never met a Marine that I knew of. And I went to a small Christian private school, so there were no recruiters on the campus, no one, saying sign here or anything like that. So I kind of lucked out.
Yeah, I'm telling, as I'm listening to this, I'm thinking, this has train wreck written all over it. this is not going to turn out well.
It has. I tell you, I married a Marine. My son is, I don't know if I should say this out loud on the radio.
If you tell me your son's name is Chesty, I'm hanging up
now. No. What I was going to say is that my son's in his fourth week, almost his fourth week of boot camp. I guess they can put one and one together and come up with two on that one.
There you go. So you get through boot camp. What do you become?
I'm a 4671 combat videographer. That's the MOS name. Yeah. So it was a cool job, interesting job. Never did it in combat. So I have no interesting stories to tell.
Combat videographer. So is that the descendant of combat camera?
Yeah, combat camera. Same thing.
Okay.
Right.
Okay, and so at some point, you have 3 years of college. At some point, you go through officer candidate school. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I did my enlistment, and then went back home to Florida. At that point, I was married, had a son. Went back home to Florida, went back to the University of Florida, finished up there, and then decided whether or not I wanted to be a poor journalist, which is what my major was in,
right,
or if I wanted to go lead Marines. For me, that was kind of a given. So I signed up to go back to OCS, and I didn't do any of the MUSEP, ESEP, or anything like that. I just got out and then went back through OCC and then went to officer candidate school in the summer of, summer of 99 or 2000.
Okay.
2000, I believe. And then graduated from there and went on to TBS, MOS school, et cetera, and then hit the fleet, ended up at 8th Comm Battalion.
8th Comm, and what was your comm officer at that point?
No, I'm a logistics officer.
Of course
you are. So MMO, Motor T, that kind of stuff.
Nice.
At a comm battalion,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. The talk to us about, and now you're a lieutenant colonel. And you've been screened for command and selected for command, yes?
Selected for command. I'll head to NWSS 472 here very shortly.
Nice. So swing with the wings. So you're going to get a chance to knock the slime out of those slimy Marines.
Oh, my God.
Exactly. We know what goes on in the wing.
I'm going back home. I'm going back home. That's where I started years ago.
Why? Well, let me rephrase that. You're really going to get a chance to knock the slime out of them, because you know them. Well, first of all, congratulations. Command screening is not an easy thing to get through, and good luck with all of that. Let's talk about the issue that got us connected here. And that is the whole concept of online behavior, and which is broader than simply Marines United. Talk to me. First question that I ask every female Marine that I talk to about these kind of issues: were you at all surprised when you saw what was being done?
I want to say yes, but no. Right? I think I was surprised. I think the surprise for me was in the number of Marines, reserve, active, and retired in the group. So when I saw that number, 30,000, I think that was the most surprising for me. I guess I'm an optimist by nature, so I immediately began to hope, well, hopefully these folks are retired, or hopefully they're not on active duty. On the other hand, I wasn't surprised because I do think that we have some cultural struggles in the Marine Corps, and I'm sure you're going to want to talk about that, that we need to address, that need to be addressed. And I really like the way that you phrased that. This online behavior thing is a symptom. It is not the root cause of anything. And so it shouldn't be treated as such. It should be treated as any other symptom and adjudicated either legally or ethically as such. But I'm glad to see that we haven't gotten bogged down with or trapped, right, behind trying to treat this as once we get rid of these online behavior issues, we will have solved the problem.
Next question that I ask everybody, do we need more classes? Do we need more senior people to stand up? And I don't want to tip what I believe to be the appropriate answer by using a term like bloviate, but do we need more? Do we need more classes?
So it's interesting because I've just spent the last 2 weeks in my commander's course and thinking about this issue, other issues, and how I want to handle those. Okay. And so I was glad to see that a lot of the, say, the online training that Marines had been doing is now going to be turned back over to NCOs and staff NCOs and incorporated into what I think should be leadership training. You know, that face-to-face, knee-to-knee. You remember, you know, when you'd go out on a hike or you'd hike 3 miles and then maybe your platoon commander, your company commander would do 15 minutes and you'd talk about leadership and you'd talk about some of the historical greats and some of the people who have, you know, recently served, and you hold up these examples and you stress for them what Marines are about. And I like to underline that phrase "are." And I think this is my opinion that we have done too much in the opposite direction where we're stressing a lot of what Marines should not be about. I think, and I'm of the opinion, that when we look Marines in the eye and we remind them of who we are and those who have gone before us and the giants on whose shoulders we stand, we can spend a lot less time talking about the things that we should do. When we're busy talking about the standard and setting the example every day about the standard to which we expect Marines to adhere, then I think that we don't have to spend as much time talking about these individual breaches of human decency and Marine conduct. And so short answer is I don't think we need more classes. I think we need more leadership. And I think that we need more leadership by example, leadership by mentorship, leadership by PME, right? And that PME doesn't have to be sitting in the class necessarily. That leadership by PME can be incorporated into everything that we do, from staff meetings to the hike you do or the run you do, et cetera. Hope I answered the question for you.
No, you did, and it brings up an interesting way that we kind of check blocks in the Marine Corps, and that is, yeah, this is a requirement, but we're going to take it off the training schedule, and we'll put it into MCI time by simply saying you can do it online, which means it's not important to us. It means, let me get my secret decoder ring out there. Is this important? Answer, no. And in the Marine Corps, one of the challenges for commanders, for OPSOs, is I have all these mandated requirements that I have to do. In addition, the Marine Corps, the next time the Marine Corps says no to a request for forces or an opportunity to train with somebody will be the first time, because they simply don't do it. And so when you work at the MEF level in ops and you see the number of RFF, requests for forces, the number of, and it's like, how do we do this? And so what happens, especially in battalions, and I worked, one of my last duty assignments was at MEF headquarters group. Underneath MEF headquarters group is the COM battalion. And COM, Intel, radio battalion, those entities do nothing but go. They support everything the MEF does. And on top of that, they get layered all these other requirements, and then they have annual requirements for physical fitness, for education, for other things. And it is a training cycle from hell to manage all these different requirements and really to decide which ones aren't we going to pay a whole lot of attention to. And those get slid to, hey, is there a way that we can migrate this to some kind of MCI or online course that people can just sit there and click through, and we can all say we did it, but we really don't have to devote the capital to it. And so I think I would absolutely agree with you. Bringing that back off the online and spending time in it is absolutely critical. I want to go back to...
Can I add something?
No, go ahead. Okay. I'm kidding.
All right. But I think, you know, time is time, no matter whose schedule it comes out of. So I think that part of this is giving senior leaders, enlisted and officer, the space to be creative about how that gets done, right? So if I tell you you've got an hour of MCI time or Marine online time to get after these classes and click through these classes, versus if I tell you that there needs to be an hour on your training schedule to talk about this, it's the same thing, right? It's still time out of the training schedule. And so making sure that where the accountability lies is at the company commander, first sergeant level, the battalion, squadron, CO, sergeant major level. How that gets executed is up to them. You know that you've got to get after this, but how you get after it, I'm gonna rely on you to use your own creativity and ingenuity to do that.
You want me to trust you?
Really? Yes.
So that's what you want?
Okay. Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's talk. Okay. Let's. We're gonna come back to this.
Okay.
All right. So online behavior. Since we don't need more classes, what do we need?
So, specifically with online behavior, or the broader cultural question?
It's a general.
What are you asking me?
It's a general discretion, Colonel.
You
can tackle it. However, I want your solution.
Okay. So again, I go back to online behavior as a symptom. I do think, I know the page 11, some people think that was kind of cheesy, but honestly, when you listen to some of the task force and the round table and their angst around trying to figure out the right legal footing for this thing, right? How to address this. There was some, I guess, law that needed to be written to make this, to put this particular behavior in a place where it could be adjudicated legally. Okay?
You mean specifically addressed and spelled out in the UCMJ and in Navy regulations. So a culture that's been dealing with this issue since they've got cell phones in grammar school, through middle school, through high school, and into college, so now they join a different culture, can be told specifically, see this? You are not allowed to do this in this tribe.
Yep.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So that's either.
So I think that's necessary.
Okay, I agree with you.
I think that's necessary. Okay, it's cheesy. It's a page 11, but let's get everyone on the same sheet of music. You know what you're not supposed to do here. Let's take our ethos and our leadership and what we say that we're about, honor, courage, and commitment, and let's apply that to this very specific thing. Okay. But if I, again, I go back to this, if I, as a commander, as a leader, am trying to address this holistically, I'm only thinking about that and thinking about, okay, what do I have to put in place to get after that specifically? But most of my brain power is going towards what is it about our culture, right, that says that that would have ever been okay? What is it about what we're doing on a daily basis between commander and those who are commanded, between officer enlisted, staff NCOs and NCOs, that would have ever let us think that that was okay? And I do think those broader cultural questions have to be asked and answered.
Okay, so let me ask you, what's the disconnect? How does this form of sexist behavior exist in the Marine Corps?
The same way any other sexist behavior exists in the Marine Corps. And that gets second to the broader question. This is a method. This online stuff is a method. Okay. The root cause, the root issue is kind of as we were discussing in our pre-conversation, it is not having enough women in the service so that whenever you step into a new unit, into a new billet, you're always the odd one out. You're always reproving yourself. You're always proving that I'm not, you know, one of those three women. Right. I am someone to be taken seriously. I do serious work here. And so there are these cultural issues, but I do want to make this point and to culture. Okay. Nothing pains me more. And this is Austin speaking. Okay. Than seeing a senator or a congressperson poking a finger in the chest of our leadership, holding us accountable. When some of them just got toilets on the first floor of the Senate, you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
You are going to hold us accountable because the Marine Corps transformation process is not always 100% effective with the stuff that you send us. And I think looking at our broader American culture is necessary, right? And kind of we all take a look at ourselves and think about where this comes from, understanding that we're not cloning Marines. There isn't some secret Marine essence, right, that gets injected into everyone. We're transforming Marines, which means we are taking raw material from the American culture writ large, and we are making them into this thing that is a Marine. And it starts in boot camp, but as we were discussing earlier, this is why staff NCOs and NCOs are so important, because this is a process that continues throughout your service. We hope at some point it sticks and that when you go back to your civilian life, whenever that is, whether that's 4 years or 20 years or 30 years, we're returning something that looks, acts, and sounds like a Marine. But that is a continual thing. I like to liken it, right, for myself to being a Christian. I can say that I'm a Christian, but that doesn't turn me into anything particularly overnight. There's a transformation process that happens over time, right? And at the end of your life, you hope that you look a little bit more like Christ than when you started. And that's what we're doing kind of throughout the Marine service. And I think when we go into it with that perspective, and that understanding that Marines are not perfect coming out of boot camp, there is a continual transformation that must continue, right? And that when leaders don't take that role seriously through PME and leadership and face-to-face leadership and engagement and teaching and training, then people start to slip off the rails. But if you're asking Austin what we have to do to address any of those symptoms, it's that. You have to get after the culture, but you have to get after the culture in such a way that is proactive, not reactive, that is positive and not negative.
There's an Associated Press story that came out, I want to say, on Saturday, and I'll quote from it. They've opened 21 criminal cases, this task force that's investigating the Marines United online behavior issue. It's an NCIS task force. 16 suspects have been identified. 9 active duty Marines, 2 Marine reservists, 3 sailors, 1 Navy reservist, and a civilian. Suspected crimes include extortion, stalking, threats, and theft of photos. And they're moving through a lot of data. How most disturbing about this is what I would call the weaponization of of somebody's a photo that they send to somebody. I would say 99% of the time with the expectation of privacy. And we've already talked about, I believe that it needs to be specifically spelled out for young people saying that this is against the law in this tribe. You cannot do that. And I believe the DOD is moving to address that. But, but within the culture, there's the same thing that is dealt with in colleges in terms of harassment is dealt with in the Marine Corps. How do you deal with that? Is it simply a function of leadership? And I guess what I would, and let me refine the question. I believe that we have a problem in the Marine Corps, leadership in a comfort zone, I'll call it. And that is, I don't care if you're talking about Paris Island or online behavior. We like to lead, and then we see something wrong, and then we want to walk up to somebody on the down low, because I don't want to get anybody in trouble, okay? And we want to say, hey, man, that's not cool. And when they turn to us and say, hey, fuck you, mind your own business. We somehow in our mind check a box saying, well, I've done what I'm supposed to do, and walk away. These incidents have staff NCOs, officers involved in the vast majority of them. Almost, you know, in talking about the incidents at Paris Island, not one of them occurred that wasn't witnessed by other staff NCOs.
Yeah.
Yet we somehow shrink from that moment of confrontation. And to me, that's a huge problem in the Marine Corps. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question, because I'm sure in your research, you've heard of the bystander effect, right?
No, never.
Okay. So the bystander effect, and there was, first started studying this, probably, I think back in the 1970s, there was a young woman up in New Jersey who was basically stabbed to death by either an ex-boyfriend or an ex-husband in broad daylight in the middle of the street. Okay. This was in an alley somewhere in broad daylight. She was stabbed like 16 or 17 times. And it was witnessed, right? So when they went around to kind of figure out who saw this, they had 15, 20 people who had seen the attack. And the problem was is that each of them assumed that someone else was calling the police. Someone else was acting on this woman's behalf. And so in the end, no one called the police. No one called the ambulance. And she died. They're in the middle of the street, okay? And so I think most Marines, after some part of the transformation has taken, are at least going to get over that initial bystander hurdle, right? We're not going to assume that someone else is going to do the heavy lifting. But I think what you called it earlier, leadership to the point of friction, okay? And so most Marines, I think, will take that first step. Hey, dude, knock that off. Hey, you know that's not right. Or, hey, you know, this is what I saw. This is what I heard. Let's talk about that. But you're right. Very often, and this isn't just a Marine thing. I think it's a human thing. If you get pushback, you stop and kind of hope for the best. And so maybe there is a training or an ethical understanding about what needs to happen next. That you need to be, because as part of a tribe, as part of a brotherhood, we do this thing where we are, you don't want to rat anybody out, right?
Right.
You don't want to take that to hire. You don't want to take that to someone who is, maybe has more rank on their collar and maybe can do something about that.
Right.
But maybe that's the next step. Maybe that's the next piece. It's not enough to just engage. You have to engage to the point of completion. You have to know that this has been handled and closed correctly. I don't have the right answer for that. I don't have the complete answer for that.
I thought, one, you're a lieutenant colonel. Two, you just completed the commander's course. What are we waiting for you to get the solution to this, Colonel?
Hey,
what
dude.
The hell? Let me give you two examples. Let me give you two examples of this that are current events.
Yeah.
The Hamdiya case involving 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines. I remember reading a statement, and I'll paraphrase it, a corporal after, you know, they believe there's a guy setting IEDs. They go into his house, they take him, they flex cuff him, they throw him by a shot hole, they have an IED placed in it that they found and stashed. They radio in to the company COC, request permission to engage, an IED in placer, shoot him. Right, go up, he's still alive, somebody pulls out a pistol, shoots him again and kills him. They bury him. Long story short, his friends who work at the University of Baghdad come to the commanding officer of 1st Battalion, 1st Marines, General David Furness, and they say, hey, our friend had nothing to do with it. Your Marines came in and took him out of his house. And the response is, okay, look, we make salacia payments when we do something wrong. Is somebody looking for money here? I need to start an investigation, blah, 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 blah. The investigation goes, the first round of the investigation, everybody tells the same story. He said he didn't like it, and he gets the meth involved in it. Now a corpsman says, I'm not going to lie, we killed him. In the course of further statements, one of the corporals is questioned, and they said, you knew this was wrong. Why didn't you stop it? And they said, he said, and I'll paraphrase here, when I first heard it, I said, I'm not doing that. And these guys are guys I fought with in Fallujah in 2004, right? I mean, I've gone to combat with these guys. I fight with them all the time. And Sergeant X looked at me and said, you know, what are you, a fucking pussy?
Yeah.
Now, he didn't stand up and say, no, but I'm not doing this. And guys went to jail for that. Okay, so do you think that you have the moral obligation and the obligation as a peer and a friend to keep them from doing something that's blatantly illegal and something they'll have to do with it? The answer is not only yes, but hell yes. Fast forward to Paris Island. The drill instructor that leaves the recruit in bleach will spend a year in the brig because of that. Do you think that you care enough about a peer, about a fellow Marine, and about a recruit in a helpless situation to take care of the recruit and keep him from going to jail? The answer is you would think, but that social point of friction is so powerful that I'm going to rat you out, that I'm going to turn against you, that it not only affects behavior there, it affects behavior online, it affects behavior in the area of sexual assault.
Yeah.
To the point where you and I were talking before, you hear women say, it's easier for me not to report it than to go through the social hell that I will go through, to include having to leave this unit and go to another unit because I'm ostracized, because I turned against somebody who works down the hall in my shop. I violated my chain of command by not making them aware. I didn't make them aware because I didn't have the confidence that they would have my back because of this, and this. So it's that leadership to the point of friction to me that you see over and over and over and over and over. And that's why I agree with you in terms of we don't need more classes. We need people to be held. We need people to be held accountable. And we need not only junior people to be held accountable, but senior people to be held accountable, and to send the message that, look, we expect you to behave like our tribe behaves. And if you won't do it, that phrase, everything your unit does or fails to do, we take that literally. And we will charge you with conduct unbecoming or dereliction of duty, and you will be out of this organization and on your way to do other things because you can't do it. And I think it's a huge problem in the Marine Corps. We just see it in various venues rear its head over and over again. Your thoughts?
Yeah. So, again... I'm thinking about these really kind of intently over the last couple of weeks. And I think, I want to get this right. We focus a lot in the Marine Corps in particular, on physical prowess. Okay? We want people to be physically fit. Run your PSU, run your CFT. But let's think about what value that actually has. If you don't pair physical fitness with cognitive development, and when I say cognitive development, I mean reading, writing, thinking seriously about our profession, then there's really no point to your physical prowess. Because what we want, we don't just want fit people. We want people who are fit enough so that once they reach the objective, their mind is still intact. They can think well enough to execute the mission, not just move their bodies. We want you to be able to think. And I think we need to take a similar approach to moral courage, right? Because if you're physically fit, but you're jackass, what value is that really to the Marine Corps? And when you tell both of those stories, that's really what we're talking about.
Right.
Whether we start talking about the bystander effect or something else, we are talking about moral courage. What does it take to stand up and exemplify moral courage? And the irony, at least in some of the work and the research that I've done, is that the tighter a unit is, sometimes they may be less likely to demonstrate that the type of moral courage that we're talking about today. And that's kind of there's an irony in there. But I think as the Marine Corps, as we're thinking about how to do PME and thinking about leadership and thinking about how to instill in our Marines this idea of human dignity and what to do in certain situations, we need to be focusing as much on physical prowess, our cognitive ability, and this thing over here that we actually don't really talk about a whole lot, and that is moral courage. I mean, I remember when I, good Lord, I don't give away my age here, back when General Krulat was the command, I think that he was the one where we got the core value cards.
Correct.
Right, yeah. And we were supposed to carry those around. And there was a real push at that time about honor, courage, and commitment. What does that mean? And those topics showed up in our PME, in our internal small unit PMEs, very regularly. We talked about that stuff all the time. What does that mean? And so I don't, you know, you were teasing me earlier about being a lieutenant colonel, not having all the answers. The only thing I know at this point
don't forget you completed commander's course too. I don't want to leave that out.
Yeah. But the only thing I know at this point, right, is how much I don't know, right. You know, and how much I have yet to learn about people and about myself. But I think that we need, one of the things that I think I've, you know, this is one of my notes from last week. If we're not talking about our ethos and our moral courage and our responsibilities in that area as much as we're talking about what we expect from Marines physically, then I think we're wrong. You know, it gets back to General Kulak's understanding that America doesn't need a Marine Corps, it wants a Marine Corps. And part of the reason that I believe that America has wanted a Marine Corps is that we have always set ourselves out to be better than, not just sister services, but we are cut above the rest of what you might find in our population. And so reminding our Marines of that and then insisting that they live up to it. You know, we were talking earlier about accountability and this idea of people with the most to lose who have higher rank or perhaps they're married are often held the least accountable, whereas the people with kind of the least to lose, at least financially, maybe they're lower ranked, they're junior or junior NCOs, those are the ones that get hammered. We've got to reverse that. So that, I mean, and I hate to put it like this, but if you don't make an example of someone with some rank on their collar, right?
Right.
All you do really is engender bitterness and the people that are getting hammered. And I'm with you on that one, that this idea that things are happening at junior ranks in my unit, and I have no idea that it's going on, because then that, number one, maybe means that you're clueless, right?
Right.
Or number two means that you're ignoring the problem, whichever one that is. Both require action.
My guest this morning is Austin Rollins, Lieutenant Colonel type, United States Marine Corps. She's a logistician by trade, just finished a commander's course, and you're going to go take command of who?
NWSS 472.
Okay, tell everybody what that is.
That's a Marine Wing Squadron assigned to MAG 49 up in New Jersey. So it's a reserve squadron, has three deaths, one over in Pennsylvania and one in Massachusetts. So I'll take command in July. I've had a great turnover with my guy up there, and so I'm really looking forward to stepping on board.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break, and I want to relate this discussion, this broader discussion about the morality involved in being a leader. I want to talk about relate the leadership ethos that we profess with conduct. And specifically, I want to relate it to online conduct and get your thoughts on that. We'll continue. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.